Thank you, Jonga Kandemiri. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Wednesday, May 18th, 2016. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye.
Here are our top stories this evening.
Representatives of various church denominations stage a protest over the newly introduced national pledge.
Who is no corner to go against the Constitution?
Many human rights groups say Singapore and Indonesia should halt the imminent execution of at least 15 drug convicts, including Zimbabweans.
What is really irritating at a personal level is the fact that you have governmental authorities in our country who do not seem to know that this is happening.
Some economists say Zimbabwe needs foreign direct investment and not bond notes to revive the crumbling economy.
The issue of the bond notes is not something that should be imposed on us.
And hundreds of people, including Zimbabweans living in Canada, have been displaced by raging wildfires.
Just being an evacuee, it means you are not in your natural place, you are not at your home, so there's that lack of comfort.
These stories and much more coming up. Stay tuned.
Members of various church denominations staged a peaceful demonstration in Harare today, expressing their dismay over Zimbabwe's newly introduced national pledge that is being forcibly recited by school children. This came at a time when street traders also picketed at the Harare City Council offices, demanding that municipal police should stop confiscating their wares. Reporter Thomas Chiripasi has more details from Harare.
More than 300 placard-waving members of various churches under the banner of an interdenominational group calling itself Prayer Network of Zimbabwe marched in Harare Central Business District demanding that the Minister of Education should halt the reciting of the National Pledge, which has been allegedly imposed on Zimbabwean children. Leader of the network, Jacob Ngarivume, who is also the president of the opposition Transform Zimbabwe Party, told the protesters outside the ministry's offices that the National Pledge violated their constitutional right to freedom of worship. Farai Makue, chairperson of the Prayer Network of Zimbabwe, echoed the same sentiments.
Who is no corner to go against the Constitution?
A student who declined to be named in fear of being victimized claimed that some teachers are beating up children that are refusing to recite the National Pledge. The demonstrators who were carrying the Holy Cross and singing church songs failed to meet Primary and Secondary Education Minister Lazarus Dokora, who was said to be attending a meeting elsewhere. However, the protesters met some education officials who received their petition. Some of the placards read, "No to Satanism." Acting Permanent Secretary in the Ministry, Peter Muzavazi, who received the petition, told the demonstrators that his ministry would respond to their concerns after meeting with Dokora. Zimbabwe's Chief Justice Godfrey Chigausiku recently dismissed an urgent chamber application by the Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights to stay the reciting of the National Pledge in schools until the court makes a ruling on the case. The Constitutional Court will only hear the matter in June. The National Pledge reads as follows in part, quote, "Almighty God, in whose hands our future lies, I salute the national flag, respecting the brave fathers and mothers who lost lives in the Chimurenga Umvukela," end quote. In a related development, some vendors staged a demonstration at townhouse today demanding that municipal police should stop confiscating their goods. Chairperson of the National Vendors Union of Zimbabwe, Sten Zorwadza, said street traders were not happy with council officials who were confiscating their wares.
We want them to give us a day, a date, time, when they will stop confiscation of goods. If they do not do that, we are going to pursue other avenues.
Council spokesperson Michael Chideme told the demonstrators that vendors should trade at designated points to avoid the confiscation of their goods.
There's no going back on that issue. You know, we need order in Harare.
Chideme told the vendors to put all their concerns in writing, promising that council would seek to address all their issues. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
Many human rights groups are calling on Singapore and Indonesia to halt the imminent execution of at least 15 drug convicts, who include 4 Chinese nationals, 2 Nigerians, 2 Zimbabweans, 1 Senegalese, a Pakistani, and 5 Indonesian nationals in Indonesia. Indonesia Chief Security Minister Luhut Panjaitan told journalists recently that the executions could take place any time. Human rights groups opposed to the move are the Anti-Death Penalty Network Asia, Center for Prisoners' Rights Japan, Community Action Network, and Free Community Church of Singapore. International Commission of Jurists, or ICJ, and others have condemned the planned executions. Effort to get a comment from the Minister of Foreign Affairs in Harare for the Zimbabwean Embassy in Malaysia were futile. But Africa Director for ICJ, Arnold Tsunga, tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that the death penalty must be abolished worldwide.
I've never believed that executing individuals is a solution to containing criminality. But before I even get to that, my concern is that out of those 15 individuals, we have 2 Zimbabweans who are likely to be executed anytime now, either in Singapore or in Indonesia. And what is really irritating at a personal level is the fact that you have governmental authorities in our country who do not seem to know that this is happening, or if they know, they don't share with the general population of Zimbabwe that Zimbabweans are being executed in foreign lands, and what it is that the government has done to try and represent our people so that they can at least receive fair treatment and that they be saved from the gallows.
But some Mr. Tsunga might say the government has no legal leg to stand on and challenge these executions simply because it has no jurisdiction whatsoever when it comes to crimes that are committed, say, in the Far East.
You see, the problem with Zimbabwe is that it's more than just a question of diplomatic relations and the ability of the government to intervene at law. It's a question of the fact that the structural causes that are making Zimbabweans become exposed to this type of vulnerability, that's a thing that finds itself squarely on the doorsteps of the government.
Africa Director for ICJ, Arnold Tsunga, speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Johannesburg, South Africa.
While farming remains the mainstay of Zimbabwe's economy, many youth are opting for rare office jobs ahead of a career in agriculture. But that cannot be said of Ruramiso Mashumba, a Marondera horticulture farmer, who is among 60 young Zimbabweans taking part in the Mandela Washington Fellowship Program this year. Ruramiso, who exports her produce to European and African countries, says there are many opportunities in farming that young people can exploit. She travels to the U.S. together with other fellows next month and will be based at University of Iowa studying business. Ruramiso tells reporter Ntungamili Nkomo the Mandela Washington Fellowship will empower her to take her business to a whole new level.
being chosen out of thousands of people to attend a big fellowship like the Mandela Washington is really a great honor. It's an incredible opportunity, and I'm looking forward to it.
More than 4 million people are facing food shortages in Zimbabwe as a result of the ongoing drought. There were no rains. How are you dealing with that situation as a farmer?
Has been not the best of years, a very bad year, and a lot of people have lost a lot of crops. But I think one thing that we need to work on as a country is to be able to disseminate information so that people will plant when there is better rains than when there was nothing, and also just advocate for people to start looking at conservation agriculture and also drip irrigation, because I don't think it's sustainable anymore in the days that we're living to plant without any irrigation.
And would you say there are many young people, especially females like yourself, who are venturing into farming?
Very few people venturing into farming, because the image of agriculture has always been known to be something that is tiresome and something that is not exciting, because people don't want to move in a rural, because I live in a rural community, so people don't want to move to a rural community where, you know, infrastructure is not as great as it is in the cities, access to so many things is not as great. So, and also there is also the mentality of traditional agriculture where people till with a hoe, a hand hoe, and it's so labor intensive and they don't really get returns. So I think that sort of image is in a lot of young people's minds. That's the reason why they don't want to go into agriculture. So we really need a lot of advocating to show people just the opportunities that are available in agriculture.
And what advice can you pass on to other young people on that front?
Agriculture is a big industry. Agriculture, we need food. Every single day we eat food. We are buying food from supermarkets. That shows that there's a continuous demand. And as long as mankind exists, there will be a demand for food, meaning that there is opportunity in agriculture.
Mandela Washington Fellow Ruramiso Mashumba, a young farmer based in Marondera. She was speaking on the line with reporter Ntunga Milinkomo. A delegation of Zimbabwe's House of Assembly, led by Kindness Paradza, chairperson of the Parliamentary Committee on Foreign Affairs, is on a week-long study tour in Palestine. Paradza tells Studio 7 what they hope to benefit from this visit.
We are here on a fact-finding mission to find out the extent of the atrocities which are being committed by the Israeli government on the Palestinian people. There was an Oslo agreement that Palestine must have some sort of self-rule in the West Bank as well as the Gaza Strip. So here, we are here in West Bank, a part of Palestine, and what we are seeing here is unbelievable. We have seen that the Israelis are constructing settlements.
What are you hoping to achieve from this visit, and how important is it for Zimbabwean parliamentarians to be exposed to other parliamentarians internationally?
We are grateful that Zimbabwe is now recognized in Africa and all over the world as a big power in terms of diplomacy and so forth. That's why we are here. And what we are going to do is that we are going to collect this information we are collecting here, and we are going to put a motion in Parliament to alert the international community that the atrocities are still continuing here in Palestine.
That was Kindness Paradza, chairperson of the Parliamentary Committee on Foreign Relations, speaking with Studio 7 from Palestine. Meanwhile, some women parliamentarians and men continue with a protest in the House of Assembly, where they are sitting on the floor expressing anger of human trafficking. The women have been angered by the way Zimbabwean women who were trafficked to Kuwait by employment agents were abused by so-called employers. Beata Nyampinga, ZANU-PF Goromonzi West lawmaker and chairperson of the Parliamentary Gender Committee, speaks with Studio 7 about the protest.
All the men and women, we are all coming together on this motion that our people didn't need to have gone through that. Our people need to be helped in this way and that way. Different contributions are coming up, very strong contributions coming up on this debate. And actually yesterday, when we closed Parliament, there was no quorum, and the MPs have requested that we reinstate the motion back on the order paper, which we have done today. And I think with the speaker's out tomorrow, the debate will continue and maybe to even give them first priority, knowing how passionate our speaker is with this case.
What is your end result? What are you hoping to get?
As many contributions as possible, and also out of those contributions, we might have new recommendations that we might add to the prayer of this motion, and we have the government to respond so that we have a way forward. The Minister of Home Affairs and other relevant ministers that have been mentioned on the motion that are part of the interministerial committee will be ready to respond. And once they respond on our recommendations, that's the way forward, and we wait for implementation.
That was Beata Nyampinga, ZANU-PF's Goromonzi West lawmaker and also chairperson of the Parliamentary Gender Committee, speaking with Studio 7 from Harare.
You're listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
We are broadcasting on 909 meter wave and on the 4930 5940 and 15460 shortwave frequencies.
On the internet, find us at www.studio7news.com.
You can also text us at 001-202-465-0318.
Coming up,
wildfires affect some Zimbabweans living in Canada.
One of the 200 abducted Chibok girls has been found in a forest in Nigeria.
And economists say bond notes won't fix Zimbabwe's ailing economy.
Stay tuned.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
Nigeria's military said today that it has rescued one of the 219 schoolgirls abducted by Boko Haram militants from the northeastern town of Chibok over 2 years ago.
Former U.S. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton and her sole rival for the Democratic presidential nomination, Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, split two state nominating contests yesterday, leaving her closer to clinching the nomination in 3 weeks.
And Islamic State militants have executed at least 49 people, including captive fighters, political opponents, and local accused of sorcery since February of last year in Libya's Mediterranean port city of Sirte, the terror army's largest stronghold outside Syria and Iraq, according to a report released today by an international rights group. A self-employed Zimbabwean Mtokozi Sendlovu living in Canada's Fort McMurray City in Alberta province, devastated by ravaging wildfires, says he is among thousands of people that have been displaced by the inferno, regarded as the worst in living memory. Ndlovu and three other family members are now living in Edmonton City, about 450 kilometers away from his home. They are now getting state assistance in catering for their daily needs. At the moment, Ndlovu is currently unemployed and hopes that one day he'll return to Fort McMurray, which has been declared a no-go area by the government. Indications are that up to 1,000 Zimbabweans have been affected by the fire that started almost 2 weeks ago. Ndlovu had initially put the number of affected Zimbabweans at between 150 and 200. He speaks to Studio 7's Gibbs Dube about the wildfire.
Just being an evacuee, it means you are not in your natural place, you are not at your home, so there's that lack of comfort that is there. But the nature of it is you're facing a disaster, so you just have to hang in there and hopefully things will be all right sooner than later.
So briefly, tell us about how you were told to leave the city.
The city is it's in Alberta, and it's about a little over 400 kilometers away from Edmonton, which is north of Edmonton. So there were a bit of fires, I'll say, on the Sunday prior to the city catching fire, which is about 2 weeks ago. So on Monday and Tuesday, the fire started really growing big, and the only hope was that they can control them while they are still on the
other side of the river. But unfortunately, on Tuesday, the winds grew, and I'm assuming the sparks managed to jump to the other side where there's lots of homes and subdivisions there. So once the fire was over on the other side, the houses caught fire, and it was just it just continued to keep burning and catching on to the next and following subdivisions as well. Some were completely razed to the ground. My house personally wasn't affected. What I know from the maps is that it is the structure is still up. I don't know the rest of it, whether it's still good enough, but it's still standing. And there's quite a bit of Zimbabweans in the community. So I'll put, this is a ballpark figure, maybe between 150 to 200.
And now in terms of mortgages, I'm told that you're not paying anything right now, and you're being assisted by government to actually stay in a hotel or somewhere. So what are you going to do with your mortgage since you bought that house?
For most mortgages, there's been a little bit of a reprieve from the mortgage companies and banks. They have sort of offered people to maybe hold a bit on the payments until the things are clear or until they build back their lives. So that is what is sort of happening. And basically, most of the companies have given that. And in terms of living, I would say the cost is really high. So the government did chip in. But basically, you also have to have some out-of-pocket expenses.
So right now, where are you and your family?
We're in Edmonton, Alberta, and just as before, we are paying for most part for ourselves, insurance, and a little bit of assistance from the government.
So is it a hotel or is it sort of like a camp or something like that?
No, I'm in town. We're renting a place.
And when are you going home?
That is uncertain. Right now, the government will tell the people when to go back. And the fire is still burning, uncontrollable. So right now, it's not really safe. And they have to fix the infrastructure. So that's your water, your sewer, and electricity, and things like that. So for now, I do not know. And it's a guessing game. Kind of when everyone is going back.
And in terms of work, what is going to happen?
Right now, I'm not 100% sure what that means. But, and again, for most people who are working out in the camps and all sites, the work was sort of, had already started again. But because the fire increased, so they put in a short stop order kind of thing.
That was Mtokozi Sindlovu, a Zimbabwean displaced by wildfire in McMurray, Canada, speaking with Studio 7 Skip Dube from Edmonton City. According to the International Organization for Migration, the Zimbabwean community in Canada is estimated at 50,000, concentrated in Toronto, Calgary, Edmonton, Hamilton, and Ontario.
Business people and economists say President Robert Mugabe's government must take drastic measures to revive the country's economy, but they do not support the recent policy measures announced by the Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe, which include the introduction of an export incentive paid in bond notes and cash withdrawal limits, among other issues. What could be the impact of bond notes on Zimbabwe's economy? Our correspondent Ivan Chifera has the details from Harare in the second edition of a three-part series on Zimbabwe's economy and the way forward.
Reserve Bank Governor John Manguja says latest policy measures are meant to boost industrial production, plug foreign currency leakages, and ease pressure on the United States dollar. He says the bond notes, which are designed to bankroll the 5% export incentive scheme, would be leveraged on a $200 million loan facility from the African Export and Import Bank.
The purpose of bond notes is to deal with an incentive for exporters. But I think people are now confusing that the bond notes are coming here to cater for cash shortages. No, there's no relationship. This is an export incentive scheme, and we are so happy about it.
Speaking at a meeting organized by the Zimbabwe National Chamber of Commerce to review the Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe's new policy measures, business people and economic experts said they fully supported the central bank's efforts to boost local production and exports, but were totally against the introduction of bond notes. They said printing bond notes was like bringing back the Zimbabwe dollar. Confederation of Zimbabwe Retailers President Danford Mutashu said they can only support bond notes if the coupons won't be used as a way of reintroducing the Zimbabwe dollar.
The issue of the bond notes is not something that should be imposed on us. We are quite happy that the RBZ governor is actually consulting quite extensively and has engaged us to find out what could be the implications.
Love Mo Mukono of Mukonitronics, which exports electrical goods, said the central bank should not introduce the bond notes as business and ordinary citizens have no confidence in the so-called printed money.
We need to protect our market, but we have to be clever about it. But at the same time, I would like to ask the governor, please, to reconsider printing any more money that has Zimbabwe bed on it before we agree.
Zimbabwe Investments Authority Chairman Nigel Chanakira said if the new policy is not revised, that is likely to undo the authority's attempts to promote investment.
We certainly have made headway, as you know, with the foreign direct investment. This recent development over the past month, I've been aware, I've just come back on promoting investments. It sent jitters, and so we need to send a very clear message to investors with regards to what we're doing.
Economics Professor Ashok Chakravart, who is working with the government in its efforts to improve the ease of doing business in Zimbabwe, said it was not necessary for the country to introduce bond notes as a way of revitalizing the economy.
In my opinion, the route is not to issue the bond notes. That is unnecessary. The right way to do it, in my view, as has been done by other countries, is that when you give a 5% export incentive, let's take it in the case of Zimbabwe, we have $4 billion in exports. We need about $200 million. So where do we get that $200 million? We follow the route that is suggested by basic economics, as the governor has said, which is that is we put an import tax.
Another economist, Brains Muchemwa, noted that it was not advisable for the central bank to force people to use currencies they did not like.
Currencies have to compete for relevance, and there is no currency that should ever be imposed on a people that are not interested in the currency. And I think the same would have to happen on the bond note. The bond notes would not need to be imposed on the market. The market should actually be free to accept or to refuse the bond note. And I think that is the only way in which a currency can actually be accepted.
Business executives also raised concern over government's huge wage bill and its failure to address corruption, which they claimed was scaring investors. Economist Masimba Manyanya expressed similar sentiments, adding that there was no commitment from government to fight corruption.
The IMF is very clear. Government is not moving an inch on the issue of corruption. There's so much talk about it, papers. Even the Anti-Corruption Commission itself was found to be corrupt. Now, you know, where else can we go?
Zimbabwe National Chamber of Commerce Vice President Divine Lukula appealed to the central bank and the government to consider industry's concerns in order to come up with the policies that would attract rather than stifle investment. Manguja said the recent approval of the country's debt payment plan by the International Monetary Fund and other finance institutions would boost the country's re-engagement plan and improve investment opportunities. Despite such positive moves, Chakravart said there was still need for clarity on the indigenization program, which needs amendments that would attract foreign direct investment. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
Thanks, Ivan. And remember to tune in for Studio 7 live talk when our hosts, Blessing Zulu and Gibbs Dube, will be talking with listeners and experts about a protest in Harare today over the National Pledge.
Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele. This is Marvelous Mplanga Nyahuye in Washington.
And please remember to join us at 7 every evening for news in three languages and visit us on the internet at www.studio7news.com. For more on our top stories, you can send us an email to studio7@voanews.com or text us at the following number, 001-202-465-0318. That's it for tonight, folks. My name is Chris Gande. Good night.